Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, October 6th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link, the word Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently improves the quality of people's lives as they apply these tools. And it is also known to stimulate comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And we appreciate it when people do that, too, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that's a lot easier to do when people give us timely feedback about what we're doing, what their needs are, and how we might either step them through the worksheet process or clarify some of the dynamics that underlie these tools and make them so powerful. There's the Reality Management Worksheets. There's the tool that Michael calls the Mind Shifter tool, which I refer to as Targeted Journaling. There's the Mind Goal Management Sheet. There's the Codependent to Interdependent Worksheet. There's the Responsibility Communication tool. And the list goes on and on and on. Powerful tools woven into a very effective system that can help you and or anybody else who picks them up and applies them in their life have a more joyful, a more respectful, a more satisfying life. And a set of tools to go along with that that we've been offering this year since January 10th includes the Way of Mastery. And we've been doing reading for the Way of Mastery that reading it with commentary, going very slowly, trying to pick it apart, mine it, M-I-N-E, mind, dig deep, find the gems. And yesterday we started reading Lesson 23. And Lesson 23 is titled The Voice for Love. And where we left off was at the beginning of a section titled The Release of All Illusion. You know, the Way of Mastery has told us in various times and ways that within an illusory world, an illusion can hold great value. But in the real world, the illusion has no value. In the actuality of things, right? You can have an illusion, you can have a hallucination, you can have a mirage that there's a lake in the desert. But you'll die of thirst if you try to drink from that lake. It's not really there. So as we try to live our lives and make it better, make them better, make our relationships better, it seems pretty straightforward to me that if I'm living in or from an illusion, I'm not going to have as much satisfaction. I'm not going to get as well connected to the people and things around me as if I'm seeing things clearly for what they actually are. And to see things clearly, I would need to end illusion. So this is a very powerful heading to this next section, the release of all illusion. Not just some of it, but all of it. Stepping into that, what Krishnamurti would call this, living in direct observation. Being able to see things for what they are, rather than being convinced that my illusion or hallucination or delusion is the truth of life. So the text reads, the way of transformation then is not the gaining of power. A lot of people with Western minds that are going to say, well, that's ridiculous. I need power. I need authority. I need a tool. I need a technique. I need leverage. I need money. I need control. And this book says very, very clearly, the way of transformation is not the gaining of power. It is the release of all illusion. It is the willingness to release the grip that you have had upon the shadows that your mind has made up as a substitute for the truth of your only reality, capital R reality, which Dr. Michael Rice would say is the word he uses, is actuality. And he does that to separate out from the thoughts and images the process of perception that each of us creates individually. And if you've got seven people in a room, you've got at least seven realities going on, while there's only one actuality. Or, as the way of Master would say it, there's only one capital R reality. And the way of transformation is the willingness to release the grip that you've had upon the shadows that your mind has made up. Your mind has made up those shadows as a substitute for actuality, for the truth of your only reality. The text goes on and says, the process of the way of transformation is that process in which you begin to use the mind quite deliberately in a different way. To some of you who have studied my Course in Miracles, that too is an expression or a form of the way of transformation, since all transformation inevitably requires correction of how the mind is used so that what the mind sees is different than the ego's world. When the mind is corrected, the use of the body that most serves love also naturally follows. The use of what you have created in error, which is the body, the personality structures, the emotional matrix, and the beliefs, all of that makes up what you would call yourself. All of these things are given over to be used differently. Given over to who or what? The Great Comforter. The flow of life itself. Love, God, light, creation, whatever you want to call it. I'm asking to be shown in each moment before deciding how to act. I'm watching the process of thoughts flow through me without grabbing them, without owning them, without identifying with them. And I'm allowing myself to be taught in the moment by the flow of life itself. I'm asking a higher level of integrated wisdom to show me how to be of service, how to be a blessing, how to contribute to the flow of life in a way that extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. So that last paragraph again says, when the mind is corrected, the use of the body that most serves, capital L, love, also naturally follows. The use of what you have created in error, what have you created in error? The body, the personality structures, the emotional matrix, and the beliefs. All of that that makes up what you call yourself. All of these things are then given over to be used differently. Therefore, the deeper you come to understand and to know and to feel the depth of the self that you have constructed in your attempt to conform to an insane world, the deeper you understand all of that, the greater the space there is for you to be informed by love, capital L, love. Not that the body disappears, not that the personality structures disappear, but rather they become transparent. The value you have given them has been withdrawn, and they're given over to be used in a different way. To use a simple example, the painter begins to paint devotional paintings out of her love and acceptance of grace, or the speaker is brought into alignment with love, and that love creates a context in which what is spoken differently, with a different purpose and a different intent, and therefore to a much different audience. And it begins to be informed in ways to use the skills and the gifts that one has developed. or one who works with the hands in the fields begins to work with a different purpose and begins to be informed in ways to use their skills and gifts that one has developed. Perhaps they do that to feed the hungry or the needy. The forms of expression change to be more conformed with which voice is running the show. When the ego was running the show, or thought it was, the personality, the emotions, and the body were used to serve the very survival of the ego. When the ego has been displaced and the voice of love, capital L love, has been returned to the place of authority, in that moment, careers can change. Because in that moment, the very meaning and purpose of existence has changed for that mind which has awakened. The text goes on and says, in the initial stages, as this process is occurring, this can elicit fear, a sense of disorientation, or a sense of self-doubt. All of these things must be embraced with faith, which is indeed the substance of things unseen. Love is not quite settled in perfectly yet, and the mind is still gripping somewhat the things and the ways of the world. And yet, a deeper voice is compelling the self to release old values, to release old careers, to release old relationships, old clothing and old furniture. Everything begins to change. And it feels as though loss is being experienced. Yet, what is loss in the world is gain in the kingdom. For what can be gained but the reawakening to the simplicity of the truth? And as I've done so many times before in the book, here's a restatement of that truth. Quote, I belong to creation. I do not belong to the world. I and my creator are one. Since I still find myself in this world, how can I dedicate this body and its attendant personality and emotions to the voice for love? Close quotes. And that becomes the sole purpose, both the soul, S-O-L-E, singular, and the soul, S-O-U-L, as the essence of your being. The soul slash soul purpose becomes the willingness to allow capital L love to inform your thoughts, your words, your actions in each moment. The text goes on and says, it is quite true that such a one born of love can be very misunderstood by the world. Such a one, I once said, is born like the wind. You do not know where they have been. You do not know where they are going, and neither do they. But they are present where they are, constantly dedicated to being merely a servant of or a conduit of the voice for love. Recognizing that time and the world no longer hold any function, no longer hold any value, no longer hold any purpose, except for that purpose which the Holy Spirit would give it. And the only value the Holy Spirit gives the world is to see it as a context through which the offsprings of creation can be healed and awakened. The way of transformation does indeed require commitment, a deliberate choice. This can be the value, by the way, of initiatory experiences. And not too far in the distant future, we will be helping to inform Shanti Cristo so that the initiatory experiences are offered and provided. The value of this is that it makes conscious and public what the soul is desiring and calls the conscious mind to step into as a deeper self-discipline, a deeper self-commitment, and a deeper self-maturity. Beloved friends, this is not something to enter into in a lazy way. We would highly suggest then that as you go through the mind, ask yourself, quote, are there any of the lessons that I read with only half of my focus, with part of my attention on trying to get dinner ready, or getting my taxes paid, or getting to the office, close quotes. If there is any such lesson that you've not brought the wholeness of your being to in a state of openness and surrender, go back, read it again. You will discover that there has been much that has been missed. Each exercise has been carefully chosen. Each exercise offers you an immediate way to begin to transform certain aspects of your mind. Therefore, each moment should be treasured. Please hear this. As the mind, the conscious mind, begins to become more informed by the voice for love, vigilance and discipline become even more necessary, simply because you are dealing with more power, more true power. The purpose of your very being takes on a far different flavor. You begin to realize that wherever you are, there is a precious moment that offers an opportunity for healing, for love, for awakening. And it is not to be missed. Each moment of your existence in this plane of density is not to be missed. Once, when I was reaching out to this beloved brother at 3 o'clock in the morning, he proclaimed to me, quote, could you please come a little later in the morning? I would like to get some sleep, close quotes. My answer to him is what I will give to you now. Have you not been sleeping long enough? Will you use time constructively to realize that where you are is not in the world at all, but in a context made new by your desire to awaken, which invited the Holy Spirit to take over the show, so to speak? Wherever you find yourself is not an ordinary moment any longer. Though you may seem to walk in the world, though you seem to deal with the things of the world, you must do as long as the body lasts, dealing with the things of the world. But while that happens, you no longer belong to the world. Another voice has touched you. Though your neighbors and friends, perhaps even your children, your spouse, and your parents cannot possibly yet see who walks among them, you are a disciple of Christ. And Christ is the Father's only creation, created in love, capital L love, as love, to extend love. Just to back up just a little bit, the question is, have you not been sleeping long enough? Will you use time constructively to realize that where you are in this moment is not in the world at all, but in a context which has been made new by your desire to awaken? That context invited the Holy Spirit to take over the show, so to speak. Wherever you find yourself is no longer an ordinary moment. Though you seem to walk in the world, though you seem to deal with the things of the world, which you must do as long as the body lasts. Yet while all of that's happening, you no longer belong to the world. Another voice has touched you. And though your neighbors and friends and perhaps even your children and spouse and parents can't possibly yet see who walks among them, you are a disciple of Christ. And Christ is the Creator's only creation, created in love, created as love, created to extend love. The next section is titled, "You are in the most important journey anyone can ever take." Now, if you're reading along, if you're listening to this, and you're going slowly, these last 2.5 pages will either begin to transform your life or begin to make you or bring up in you fear or resistance. These last 2.5 pages are talking about a fundamental transformation in the way you use your mind and your commitment to seeing through the insanity of the world. I mean, we're literally, actually just hypnotized to just get up every day and go through the motions and be good consumers and be good Democrats or be good Republicans or be good libertarians or be good Christians or be good Muslims or be good Hindus or be good Jews. We're just absolutely inundated with the brainwashing and conditioning that has us just march through our lives missing the individual moments, each of which, as this last 2.5 pages just said, is an opportunity to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful, is an opportunity to teach only love. Each moment of our lives on this physical plane is an opportunity to be a conduit for the creative energy to express in form, in a way that transmutes the depression, the anxiety, the anger, the guilt, the shame, the greed. To try to wrap your conscious logical mind around this, every moment of your life, every interaction with someone at a grocery store, every interaction with someone in traffic, every conversation at work, every phone call, every email, every text is an opportunity for you to take a step back and release the illusion that what the people in the world tell you is so important is important. Release that illusion. What most people tell you is important is part of the insanity of their family and their culture. It has nothing to do with what's truly important to you now that you've decided for Christ, now that you've decided to awaken, now that you've decided to release all illusion. And again, I've lost track of how many times this book says, you might want to go back and reread those lessons that preceded this one, because it's a pretty good bet that you've only skimmed the surface. It's a pretty good bet that unless your life has been radically transformed with each new lesson, there's still more there for you to tap into. There's still more for you to get benefit from the exercises that are offered. There's still more for you to see about the false nature of your belief system. there's still more for you to see about the attachment you have to the identification of yourself as a certain kind of person with a certain kind of skills, with a certain kind of value. Like I was talking about yesterday in the show, the idea that we are taught that we are better than some people and worse than others, and vice versa. We are taught to believe the illusion of separation. We're taught to think of and relate to people through the listing of categories. Artificial, arbitrary delineations of this as being different or better or worse than that. And these events and people and groups as having more value than others. Each and every lesson is providing opportunities for us to break through that illusion, to question anew, to understand that if I have a negative thought going in my mind or a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion active in my mind, I can instantly know it's false, it's wrong. It's an old tape playing. It's not about the current moment. In this moment, there's an opportunity for me to teach only love by choosing to share only the loving thoughts. It doesn't mean I won't have unloving thoughts. They've talked about this extensively. Thoughts are just this flow of energy in life. All minds are joined. So anybody who's having a negative thought might radiate that out, and it might show up in the mind of anybody else, no matter how loving they want to be. Moving forward on this path, the way of the heart, the way of transformation, is not about never having a negative thought or an unloving thought. It's about choosing to withdraw the fear, the upset, the identification with those negative thoughts, and choosing to identify with the voice for love, choosing to be a conduit for the voice for love, the voice for life, the voice for the Father, the voice for creation, the voice for the Christ mind, the voice of the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to say, because the word is not the thing. And there are an endless parade of words all pointing toward the same experience. The next section is titled, You Are In. You're not headed towards. You're not, oh, someday if you're lucky you might get there. You are currently in the most important journey anyone can ever take. You are a miracle of the creative energy expressing in form. Abraham Hicks likes to say, you are at the cutting edge of creation. You're right here where the intangible creative force itself is expressing in form. You're right here given dominion over mind energy, which is a creative power. You get to decide where you direct it. And if you want to move forward in the way of transformation, as it just said in the previous page, the way of transformation as a process, as a life, does indeed require commitment and deliberate choice. So, the last page and a half, 2.5 pages, about the release of all illusion, says, when your mind is corrected, it will start to change things. It will start to change how you live your life and how you use your body and how you speak and who you interact with. the deeper you come to understand and to know and to feel the depth of the self that you have constructed, your ego, your sense of self as being better or worse than other people, as being intimately tied to your thoughts about yourself instead of this greater love, the more you see that, the less power it has over you and the greater the space there is within you for you to be informed by the creation itself, by the energy of love. Your body doesn't disappear. You don't shrink. You don't lose 50 pounds. You don't get more beautiful or less beautiful. It's still there, but it becomes transparent to this process. The value you have given to all of those things, your height, your weight, your bank account, your relationships, your possessions, you withdraw that value and you give that value over to be used in a different way. To use a simple example, somebody who is a painter, before they pick up this work, before they get on this path, and all of a sudden, it's not like they quit painting, but now they start painting different things. Maybe they paint devotional painting out of love and acceptance and grace. Or maybe you're a public speaker and you used to speak about, you know, how to speak your way to more money or how to win friends and influence people or how to become, you know, a better presenter than Tony Robbins. And then you get on this path and something changes in the alignment. And you align with this voice for love, and that love creates a context in which what is spoken, even if it's the same stuff, you're speaking it differently, with a different purpose and a different intent, and therefore to a whole different audience. It reminds me of the story of Richard Alpert. He was researching the use of psychedelic drugs with Timothy Leary at Harvard. And their intended purpose was enlightenment, was higher consciousness. And the more he studied and the more he pursued it, the more he realized, you know what, there's an ancient set of wisdom to this. So he went to India to study with a guru. Now, he was a Harvard professor. So it's not like he quit using his intelligence. He just used it differently. And he came back wearing these orange robes. And he spent the rest of his life not being a professor at a college, but being a teacher in a different way. A teacher by modeling. There's a story, I think it's in one of Alan Cohen's books, where he talks about a man who was like a vice president in a bank, and he was very good at what he did, and he realized that he had a different calling, and he went off and he found a guru and he learned to meditate and he started wearing robes, and he was walking down the street. He, you know, years later, he'd gone back into the city that he used to live in, and he bumped into somebody who was a higher up at one of his banks. He says, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's you, and I'd love to have you come back and help us in our department." And his first thought was, "That's ridiculous. I can't do that. That my life has so much more meaning and spiritual and all of this other stuff." And then he finally realized, he might go back into that department and start doing that work with a whole different energy and focus and bring the voice for love into that workplace. And so he did. And that's exactly what they're talking about here in this paragraph. You might do the very same thing, but the words will be spoken differently. The interactions with people and your relationships will have a different purpose. You might be doing it to a different audience, or you might work in the same field doing the same things, but there's a depth and a richness to your interactions because you're not doing it for the purpose of gaining something from somebody. You're doing it for the joy of being in the moment and being an extension of the good, the holy, and the beautiful, of being a conduit for the voice for love. And yet, that can get kind of scary at times. People that have a speaking career and all of a sudden decide, you know what, I can't really find any satisfaction of talking about how to speak my way to more business or try to teach other people how to earn more money through public speaking. But I still have a passion for speaking and teaching. Well, what the heck am I going to do with that? Our Western mind doesn't really do so well with that questioning state, with living in the question. Our Western mind wants solid, predictable answers and outcomes. But what this work and other great spiritual teachings are pointing us towards is that fantasy, that illusion of all of these solid outcomes is, number one, it's temporary. And number two, it's just an illusion. There's always so much more going on. In, through, as, around. Anyone that's perceiving any set of activities within any civilization. The civilization that people live in where they have all of this stability and this government and this financial status, that even the civilization itself is a temporary thing. Civilizations come and go. But we create the illusion that it's permanent. And work like this is calling us to tap into something that's permanent underneath that, to accept the temporary nature of the flow and the manifestations in form of that flow of creative energy, and tap into what's underneath it that never changes. I remember listening to a talk with Gangaji, and she just white-haired woman sitting, talking, very soft energy voice, just over and over again talking about learning to sit and watch what comes and goes. My youthful beauty comes and goes. My thoughts come and go. My emotions come and go. The wind comes and goes. The temperature outside comes and goes. The leaves on the trees come and go. I just watch, and I watch what comes and goes. And if I make a practice of watching what comes and goes, she says, eventually I will get introduced to that which never comes and goes, which is always there and always was there. It's the essence of what happens when people do deep meditation. I try to choose those words very carefully. It's the essence of what happens when people do deep meditation. It's not what people create. It's not what people achieve when they do that deep meditation, because the part of them that would want to create or achieve cannot get them to that connected state, cannot get them to that realization. But the truth of that realization is always there in each of us, and it lies underneath all of these churning thoughts, all of these churning beliefs and identifications, all of these churning values. We value so much the physical things that we think we have to have, whether it's the latest electronic gaming system or the latest car or the latest fashions or, you know, name it, whether it's food or a relationship or housing. And we place so much value on it. But it's all ephemeral. It's all changing. And underneath all of that, in each of us, there is a core. There is the essence of creative energy expressing in form. There is a connection to the source. There is a connection to the great comforter. There is a connection to the part of you that can be conduit for the voice for love. And because we've been in the body for so long and we've been conditioned by our culture and our family, and it's been mentally rehearsed for so long, because of all of that, the way of transformation does indeed require commitment and a deliberate choice. And it says here in the book we read earlier, beloved friends, this is not something to enter into in a lazy way. Why? Because the conditioning that's been done for you, to you, around you, has been highly programmed for decades. And it continues day in and day out. Every time you turn on your radio, your television, your movie theater, you open your books, your smartphone, etc., your laptop, the conditioning, the inundation that's happening to your senses, to your sensibilities, to your thoughts, is not being done in a lazy way. Okay? There are books that have been written about subliminal advertising and brainwashing and conditioning. There are television shows that are ostensibly news shows. But if you watch them, you realize this isn't really the news. This is either entertainment or this is conditioning. This is people yelling at me that I need to be against this, that, and the other thing. I need to be for this thing and that thing. If I want to belong, I have to align with these people. I have to shout down those people. I have to vote against that thing. If I want to be in the in crowd, I have to have this kind of clothing and these kinds of cars and possessions and these kinds of letters behind my name, etc. So it's not as though the conditioning was done once upon a time and then it's over. And there's just some remnant of it that I can sweep away when I'm conscious. It's the conditioning of our culture is still happening actively day in and day out, moment to moment. That's why the way of transformation does indeed require commitment and a deliberate choice. It's something to enter into in a very specific, committed way. And one of the things they recommend is that we ask ourselves, hey, when I was going through these lessons, whether it's the Course in Miracles lessons or the Way of Mastery lessons or Gangaji's teachings or Diedrich Wolzak's work or Michael Rice's worksheet, when I was going through that worksheet the last time, did I really slow down and listen and pay attention? Did I read the true meaning of the words, like sustained incoherence? Did I really let it sink in that every time I have hostility and fear in my mind, it comes from internal corrupt data? And if I have hostility and fear, it is my warning signal to tell me that I'm using a process called sustained incoherence to build the pictures in my mind. Did I really let that sink in a little bit more? Because how many times have I heard directly stated or had it been inferred, you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, that's tragic, that's wonderful, as though the outside events or the actions of other people causes my internal state. If I'm going to undo that conditioning in my mind, which as Guy Finley says, there's a mechanical level of my mind that just keeps churning and doing what it's programmed to do. And if I'm going to undo that, I have to have vigilance and commitment. I have to have vigilance and commitment at one level to undo what's already been done. And I would offer, I need to have vigilance and commitment at another level to break the pattern of shoving those same patterned trivialities and negativities into my mind, and I need to be vigilant to pour good stuff in. I need to spend less and less time sitting in front of political or judgmental YouTube videos or scrolling on social media, and I have to spend more time pouring the things that really deeply resonate in me for the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And it's easier than ever to do that these days. There are so many podcasts out there. There are so many spiritual teachers that have access to the internet and social media. And yet, you need to make the choice. You need to choose. All right, I'm going to listen to Guy Finley. I'm going to listen to Ganga G. I'm going to find Abraham Hicks videos and listen to them and actively question. Because as this work points out in Lesson 23, the title of the next section is, you are in the most important journey anyone can ever take. It's not like that journey is going to start tomorrow, or, you know, if you make that pilgrimage to the Himalayas, if you go down to Papa G's or Krishnamurti's gravesite, and you start meditating and praying, then you'll be on the journey. It's here and it's now. You are in the most important journey that anyone can ever take. A journey without distance to a goal that has never changed, even into a place that is unchangeable forever. You have undertaken the journey from illusion to capital R reality. You have undertaken the journey from fear to love, from false power through manipulation, through image, through conforming to the world, to true power resting in the mind of Christ, being a conduit for that which awakens the offspring of creation. So it's a call, it's a clarion call, it's an invitation. It could sound really, really serious, and of course it does, it sounds serious, but it's also in the middle of a book that says, let not seriousness enter the mind. Well, how can it be serious and not serious? Well, how can light be a particle and a wave? How can most every deep truth have as one of its characteristics that its opposite is also true? That happens because there's a lot more going on in our lives than we are aware of. And if we want something different in our life experience, we have to do something differently. And in this work, one of those doings that's offered is use time differently. Use the energy that we call thought, your mind energy, differently. How do you do that? Well, one of the many ways you could do that or choose to do that is reading and rereading these lessons and or stepping into the actual use of the exercises as they're given. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We've got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to leave the reading there and invite comments or questions or testimonials or soliloquies or plans for the upcoming weekend. Today's Thursday, I realize it's not a Friday. Today's Thursday, that means we've got a support group that's available tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. It's available free through the Internet. All of the information you would need to join us or pass it along to somebody else is available on mindshiftersacademy.org website. Please feel free to join us and or pass that information along to somebody you think might benefit. Please remember that we're all in this together, and every smile you give somebody, every genuine connection you make with people, is a way to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful.
Yes.
Area code 541. Welcome.
Yes. How are you today, Dr. Tim?
I'm doing well. And you, Celinda?
I'm very good. I'm about ready to march over to the garden, so that'll be fun. I'm missing the evening classes, but I know that's what needs to be, how it needs to be for me, at the evening support groups. But I know that's how it needs to be for me. So if I happen to be somewhere where I'm thinking about it, I send support to you all.
Thank you. It's appreciated.
And I just want to encourage you to continue on with what you're doing in the way of mastery, because it is so incredibly helpful. And I'm doing what I can. I've started the lesson 21, nine questions, and I'm trying to spend a week with each one of them. And what I have time to do is to write them down and to reflect on them a little bit. And then I also write the previous week's questions down, because I find that very helpful. And I also write a reason for myself as to why these statements are true, focusing on that, while I realize that I can feel the feelings come up that part of me says, no, 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 that's not so. And I know that's where my work lies. So I just wanted to share that with you and encourage you to continue on. I love your comments. I love your repeating the chapters, and just thank you.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. I'm glad you're finding it useful, and I appreciate the input. And good luck in the garden.
Oh, thank you, sir. I'm planting garlic now.
All right. Have a lovely evening. So we've got about 2.5 minutes left. I don't see Jeannie on the switchboard yet. There is time for... Oh, there, Jeannie just popped up on the switchboard. So I'll take a moment to remind us again. The support group happens tonight, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. I will also remind us that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form. And everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it.
You're entirely welcome and deserving, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, October the 6th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. Michael, moment to dial in. Magda just asked me a question about ozone machine, and I'll put a link out there to the one that we use the most often. Magda, if we've ever had one that went bad, if it was before the warranty period or whatever, like, you know, if it was for a year or 2 years or whatever, then I'm sure we would have sent it back. But as far as I can recall, just thinking about it, I don't think we've had one stop. They're awesome machines and pretty powerful and last a long time. I'm assuming you're using the same ozone machine, the one that's got the little ball, and it's just a small, like a 12-by-8 size machine. For those of you who may not know what we're talking about, this machine has a cord that, or a tube that comes out of it, and then has a ball on the end of it, kind of like a fish aquarium ball or something. And it produces ozone, which is an extra oxygen molecule. And we put our fruits and vegetables in a bowl of pure water and put the ozone machine in there. And it kills any, you know, kind of bacteria or, you know, pests or whatever. We don't, on our own garden, you know, of course, it's as organic as we can get, and we don't use pesticides and things like that. And when we buy fruits and vegetables, when we're out and about, we always get as organic as we can get. But we still put them in through the ozone machine, especially like bananas, because they, you know, are really prone to carry crud. And
parasites.
You put it in there for, yeah, and you put it in there for a little while, and the ozone runs through the water, and it cleans the food. We also do the same thing. We have another machine that we put the ball in a bag, and then we put, like, our masks, or if we've ordered something, you know, like a toy or something like that, we'll put that in there, and we always ozone to kill anything that might be on it. And what got me started on that, I was explaining what the ozone machine was, but Magda had asked if we'd ever had one go bad or quit producing ozone.
Yes.
And are they repairable?
Yes, you know, they're not worth repairing. You can buy them now. You can buy it on Amazon if you want. I'll send you a link for $28. I just sent a link to somebody the other day, $28 or $28.95, and you can't even get a technician to undo a screw for $28. So they do. We've probably over the last 10 years, maybe 15 years at Heartland, had a total, you know, at Heartland in the summer, they get a lot of use. We've maybe bought a total of maybe 8 of them. And we have 2 that we use regularly in the house, one in the laundry room for cleaning. You know, we get stuff from third world countries, toys, you know, stuffed toys and that. You never know where they've been. So we ozonate virtually everything that we give to Aria. It also tends to clean pesticides off of food and such. So, but for $28, it's not anything you could even walk into a technician, get them to open the package to think about repairing it, let alone repair it.
If you'd send me the link too, because the link I was getting ready to put out there is off of Amazon, and it's $52.99.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's why, actually, if you remember, just about 2 weeks ago, we got another one, and it was at $28, and I bought one just to have an extra around off of Amazon. So I will send it so we can put it in the off of eBay. So I'll get it and send you a copy, Magda. And actually, it's $24.99. That's a really good deal, because we spent up as much back when we first started using. They were around $80. That's a pretty good price.
They've got them now. They're one for $49, one for $52. But yeah, if eBay's got them for less, for sure.
Yes.
And so while you're getting
ozone.
That link, I'll just throw out, we were talking about food and everything. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that you can basically ozonate anything that's questionable. You know, you buy something at the market.
Except
the
last.
You buy something, rubber, anything rubber will tend to degrade in it. So you can use it sparingly on something with rubber, but like, for instance, you wouldn't want to put it in, let's say you got some kind of junk going on in the car, something spills. You wouldn't want to run it for a long time, say up near the dash of your car, because there are rubber components, and the ozone tends to degrade rubber. So that's just something to be aware of, but it's just a really awesome piece of equipment to have. And Magda, I am just looking up your phone number so that I can send you a copy of it too. Magda, Chuck, home. There's the young lady. There it is. You got it. Yeah, and if you wear masks, You know, a lot of people just throw them away. But if you get the better quality mask, you don't want to, you know, wear it because the moisture from your own body will tend to give a place for bacteria to grow. So we'll use the same mask for weeks and weeks and weeks. And every time we wear it, we just put in the ozone. So it comes out sterilized every time. And they last that way. So you do want to take it out of the ozone in advance of when you're going to wear it, because you don't want to take a mask out of ozone and then put it on your face and be breathing ozone. If the O3 molecule gets into your lungs, it tends to burn, you know, oxygen burns. You know, if you've ever gone running and you get a stitch in your side, what is that? That's oxygen. When you're running, you're opening lung volume, lung capacity, and you're opening tissue that hasn't been oxygenated, and it tends to burn. One of the reasons why, and it still boggles my mind when I watch medical programming or, you know, medical education stuff, there's a TV show that was a really great series called Call the Midwife. And in each Call the Midwife show, they show the birth of a child. And every time, as soon as the child's born, they cut the cord. It's like, hello, stop it. The cord is designed to supply blood to the baby's body so that it's got oxygen and nutrition and all the things it needs, so it can gently open its lungs and not experience a big burn. But, you know, why does the baby scream and cry? Like, who wants to come into the world screaming and crying, and yet most everybody goes, hey, look at that, the baby's crying. It's like, my babies never cried when they came into the world. The cord was left attached until it naturally stopped pulsing. Then we cut the cord. And the result of that is that the baby doesn't have to all of a sudden, because of deprivation of oxygen, go, and get the equivalent of a stitch throughout its whole lungs. Of course, babies cry. But it's not a nice way to come into it. It's not a nice introduction. But it's all about oxygen. And what oxygen does is it oxidizes. It burns things. So you make sure you take your mask out and leave it in the open air so that the ozone depletes and you're not breathing it. And if you use an ozone, some people are very sensitive to it. We keep one on our kitchen counter and use it. And Aria once in a while is a little bit sensitive to it, so we won't turn it on when she's in the kitchen. But otherwise, it's not a big deal. But if the concentration grows, like if you've got a room that's gotten mold in it or something, you can get a larger, you know, for $100 or so, you can buy an ozone generator that you put it in the room and it'll kill all the mold. But as the concentration builds up so it kills mold, you don't want to walk in there and breathe that ozone. You have to close the room up and then open it and let it air out before you expose your own lungs to that concentration of ozone. Not good. And, you know, it's actually an air pollutant too. Ozone builds up in the atmosphere in many cases, and it's a major component of air pollution. Something to be aware of.
And Aria has her favorite stuffed animal, which is beginning to look a little bit pathetic, but she won't let them wash. It's a dog, and she calls him Dog Meat, and she won't let them wash it in the wash machine. However, she will bring it in and say, Dog Meat needs an ozone bath, and she'll put it in the bag and let him stay in the ozone for a few minutes. And actually, Ryan and Gabby said they can tell when we've given it an ozone bath because they can smell the ozone when she gets home with it.
Right. But it keeps kids' toys sterilized. You know, if you've got toys that get into all kinds of stuff, it's a way to just, you know, anything. But, yeah, that Aria's, you know, since she was two, knows when Dog Meat needs an ozone bath. Oh, let's put Dog Meat, because she starts to smell. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So we've got several people out there. If somebody presses one, you're first in line. We got 50 minutes.
Let's go for it. How can we support you? What's on your mind? I had gotten, is Michael out there today?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Well, I'll hold that question. Susan thought that he was going to be joining us, and there were some questions. So hopefully he'll get on, and he'll push one, and we'll have a conversation. And or maybe Susan's out there and wants to continue that conversation. In any event, I ran across an interesting quote today from Oscar Wilde. And Oscar Wilde says this, and it's kind of interesting because one of the focal points, and you watch what people go through around this idea of truth, you know, the trauma that they go through. And Oscar Wilde said, if you're going to tell people the truth, make them laugh. Otherwise, they'll kill you. And, you know, I've shared before that that idea of the two things that John the Baptist did not understand and was not able to do, and it cost him his head. If you remember, John the Baptist went to the king and queen, and he delivered information that they just were not really overly interested in hearing. If you've ever read that or thought about that story. So John the Baptist offers this information to the king and queen, and they're in block to truth about it. And they have a lot of fear about it. So when he delivers truth, and anytime somebody's in blockage of truth and truth is delivered, stress goes up. And when stress goes up, that stress attaches for most people to getting rid of the source of the information that's being delivered. I don't want to leave. You've heard it said in the culture, you know, don't kill the messenger. Well, that's basically that's the whole conversation in a nutshell. People hear bad news and they want to attach that bad news to the person who gives them the bad news. And of course, when one's in blockage of truth, it's always bad news to be told that your mind is lying to you and you need to look at the truth. So people tend to, you know, if you look at, you know, a lot of the political attack and just the craziness that's going on, a lot of that's based in people who don't want to deal with the truth. And when they don't want to deal with the truth and truth is delivered, hostility comes up and they turn attack toward whoever's delivering the information. Well, the alternative to that, if you recognize yourself in blockage of truth and the stress level going up, you can rewire your mind so that the stress moves you into self-correction, into looking within and doing your work within. And that changes everything. The attack, you know, you hear we live in a culture where people talk about walking on eggshells with certain people in their lives. What does that mean? I keep my mouth shut because if I open it and I tell you something you don't want to look at, you're going to puke on me. And people don't particularly usually like to be puked on. And, you know, a lot of times people have issues about being puked on and they'll spit back their own stuff, which, you know, I mean, I've never done that. So but that's the game. And so it's definitely a wake-up time in the culture to bring forward this. As Oscar Wilde said, make them laugh. Get somebody in a good mood before you deliver the truth. Another kind of neat thing that I ran into, someone had posted on Facebook, and I thought it was pretty cool because the knowledge that's reflected in is just really powerful. And it's an ancestral healing prayer from Mexican indigenous people. So some of the folks who lived in Mexico long before the Europeans showed up and such, they had what they called a prayer. And it's interesting how close it is to first century Aramaic forgiveness. It doesn't specifically say, I cancel my goal for, but for instance, the first line, according to this person who posted it, is, I release my parents from feeling they had already failed me. So that would be kind of the equivalent of canceling my need for my parents to have been perfect. The next one is, I release my children from the need to bring pride to me. In other words, I cancel my need for my children to make me proud. So I release my need, I release my children from the need to bring pride to me that they may write their own ways according to their hearts that whisper all the time in their ears. I release my partner from the obligation to eat myself. In other words, you know, the belief that somebody else has to fulfill me, somebody else has to, well, here's canceling that goal. And then the acknowledgement that comes with it in this Mexican petition is, I do not lack anything. The conversation is about lack, but leaving the regulatory speech out, I do not lack anything. I learn with all beings all the time. And then it goes on, I thank my grandparents and forefathers who have gathered so that I can breathe life today. I release them from past failure. Once again, what am I doing? I'm canceling my need for ancestors to have been perfect. I release them from past failure and unfulfilled desires. So, you know, it's a powerful piece of ancestral healing to open the space to facilitate the release of the goals of the generations. And I'm aware that they've done their best to resolve their situations with the consciousness they had at that moment. I honor you, I cherish you, and recognize you as innocent. And of course, if I start recognizing my ancestors as innocent, whatever they've done, I can start to claim my own innocence, whatever I've done, as I process out those things. I'm transparent before your eyes, so they know that I do not hide or owe anything other than being true to myself and my very existence, that the walking with wisdom of the heart, I am aware that I fulfill my life project free from invisible and visible family loyalties that might disturb my peace and happiness, which are my own responsibilities. In other words, I'm not going to make somebody else responsible for my happiness. I'm actually going to like grow into an adult and take responsibility. So this is an excerpt from an ancient blessing that was created in the Nahuatl language, Nahuatl language, spoken in Mexico. It deals with forgiveness, affection, detachment, and liberation. I thought that was pretty powerful for them to have that view of how the mind works. And the core of the forgiveness process being the canceling of the goals that maintain my perceptual structure in a mode where I can keep believing perhaps that somebody else is the problem, somebody else is behind what's going on inside of me. And another thing that Jeannie came up with that I thought was interesting that really puts a whole new slant on working with children. The author of the book, Winnie the Pooh, a psychologist, explains what that book is about and where it came from. And so it starts out with a story. It occurred to Pooh and Piglet that they hadn't heard from Eeyore for several days. So they put on their hats and coats, trotted across the 100-acre wood to Eeyore's stick house. Inside the house was Eeyore. "Hello, Eeyore," said Pooh. "Hello, Pooh. Hello, Piglet," said Eeyore in a glum-sounding voice. I didn't do that glum-sounding voice very well, did I? "Well, we just thought we'd check in on you," said Piglet, "because we hadn't heard from you, and we wanted to know if you're okay." Eeyore was silent for a moment. "Am I okay?" he asked eventually. "Well, I don't know, to be honest. Are any of us really okay? That's what I asked myself. All I can tell you, Pooh and Piglet, is that right now, I feel really sad and alone and not much fun to be around. which is why I haven't bothered you. Because you wouldn't want to waste your time hanging out with someone who's sad and alone and not much fun to be around at all, would you? Pooh looked at Piglet. Piglet looked at Pooh. They both sat down, one on either side of Eeyore in his stick house. Eeyore looked at them in surprise and said, "What are you doing?" "We're sitting here with you," said Pooh, "because we are your friends. And true friends don't care if someone is feeling sad or alone or not much fun to be around at all. True friends are there for you anyway. And so we are here." And, you know, that ties into one of the reasons for this radio show, that we're here for you. "Oh," said Eeyore. "Oh." And the three of them sat there in silence. Pooh and Piglet said nothing at all. Somehow, almost imperceptibly, Eeyore started to feel a very tiny bit better because Pooh and Piglet were there. No more, no less. It's a little excerpt from Winnie the Pooh by someone in honor of the first week of October, which is Mental Health Awareness Week. Started back in 1990 by the U.S. Congress. Winnie the Pooh, according to this psychologist, was written by Milne to explain war. He was a World War I, World War II veteran, and its effects on his son, Christopher, and perhaps himself, and his experience of PTSD. PTSD, I'd offer just at this point, you know, it's generally looked at as a disorder, but we could actually drop the D. There's no disorder in that response that we call PTSD. It's actually a very powerful adaptive mechanism to protect us. It's not a disorder. It can be disruptive to the cultural way we want to live and want people to live, but it really isn't a disorder at all. They go on to explain the demons of war, and of course, if someone has PTSD, there are thought disorders, there are energetic patterns of trauma that have not been processed through, so they are carried around by many people their whole lives. So they go on to explain in this article, the demons of war followed Milne throughout his life. It was noted that when Christopher was small, Alan terrified him when he confused a swarm of buzzing bees with whizzing bullets. Popping a balloon sent him ducking for cover. Milne knew of only one way to explain to his son what was happening through his writing. He started writing a collection of short stories called Winnie the Pooh. So Alan Milne wrote these for his son. It has been theorized by Dr. Sarah Shea that Milne wrote into each character of Winnie the Pooh a different psychological disorder. While only Milne himself could tell us for certain, Dr. Shea's theory seems pointed in the right direction, but maybe a little too impersonal. After all, the book was written specifically for one child by name and features the stuffed animals that boy loved. It is more likely, in my opinion, says the writer, that the stories are a way for Milne to explain his own post-traumatic stress to his son who was six. Every stuffed friend in the 100-acre woods is a child-friendly representation of a characteristic of post-traumatic stress. Piglet is paranoia. Eeyore is depression. Tigger is impulsive behaviors. Rabbit is perfectionism. called aggression. Owl is memory loss. Kangaroo represent overprotection. This leaves Winnie, who Alan wrote in for himself, as Christopher Robin's guide through the 100-acre woods, which are his father's mind. And that was a post that was shared by We Are the Mighty. And Jeannie shared it with me yesterday, and it touched her pretty deeply and me as well. So I thought I'd share it. It definitely gives some insight into the kinds of things that we tend to carry around within us, and that these tools are designed to create a safe space where, as those two characters came to Eeyore, somebody's there just holding the space of active love, so that when a part of the mind, whether it's depression or rage or fear or guilt or sadness, loneliness, when the part of the mind that's in need of healing is ready to heal, if the safe space of active present love is there, then that part of the mind is exposed, and when exposed to active present love, it dissolves. When one doesn't have the knowledge that there is support, that those parts of the mind can be opened safely and healed, then the tendency is to keep them in hiding, them shut down, and create a whole unnatural condition for a human being called an unconscious mind. My thesis is it is not natural for us as humans to have or hold any part of ourselves unconscious. And when you realize psychologists tell us that somewhere between 90-95%, perhaps as much as 98% of our thinking is unconscious, you can see how far we've come from our natural state and why the world is so reactive, to have reacts and plays out those traumas and dramas of the past as though they were present moment truths, when in fact they're nothing but a replication of the unresolved patterns of hostility or fear that are held within the unconscious. And of course, the fact that they are held, being held as an energy field far out into infinite space, and as such, the energetic patterns of unresolved pain or trauma, by the very nature of them being energetic patterns, those energetic patterns tend to resonate or draw to us people who are in tune with those patterns. In other words, people who can play them out with us. And hence my, you know, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is the purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation. The purpose of life is to show us what we're holding on to that never belonged within us as human beings. And so life shows up as a response to that resonance, and then life itself becomes the resonating energy that brings up those patterns in the person who holds them. They come up in one of two contexts, generally speaking. One context is somebody else is there with a matching bag of garbage, and it becomes conflict and trauma again. The other is, as with Winnie the Pooh, these two characters come to just be with their friend for whatever's going on, just to hold the space and to be the space. And so without even thinking about it, comes to Eeyore. He starts to feel better because there's an energy moving in him, and he does not yet have the skill of dissolving his own unresolved trauma. His friends facilitate his healing. And to me, that's what this community, that's what all community is about. If you look down through the ages around spiritual teachings, community always developed. And when community is present, there is a presence. There is that active love. And anything that any one of us individually or collectively have hidden from ourselves that is allowed to surface in that space of love begins to dissolve. The very trauma itself begins its dissolution when exposed to active present love. The power of the reality management worksheet step by step. You'll notice that you identify a trauma. You express willingness to work through that trauma. You bring forward active present love. You cancel the goal that drives the mind to utilize that trauma-based content to produce its current perception, which allows that perception to collapse in on itself and give you access to the underlying or unconscious dynamic that's hidden. You invite a power greater than yourself to assist you in moving through that energy, you know, getting safe enough to access those things and recognizing that there is within us support for letting loose of those trauma-based energies, those trauma-based dynamics. And then the final step in the forgiveness process in that reality management worksheet is that you resolve to allow your mind to be set into action by goals to love rather than goals that come from hostility and fear. And so there's a complete package there in that worksheet for how to access and how to undo the parts of ourselves that Milne represented in his stories as the depression, the anger, the fear, all of the responses that tend to come forward from a mind that is filled with unconscious traumas. And if we could just, you know, move as a culture in the direction of safety, you know, looking at all the rages and, you know, what one would describe as crazy things going on in our culture today, if one could simply move into the space of active present love, allowing those things, not condoning those things, not saying, hooray, I'm glad they're happening, not saying I want those things to happen, but I choose to hold space to be active present love and allow that energy to move. Now, if that energy is moving in a direction where it becomes a danger, part of my allowing might be to hold one accountable for what it is that they're doing, but to recognize that as a culture, as a community, we need to move more and more in the direction of healing. You know, it's interesting, there's been a movement that has been talked about for the last several years of defund the police. And many have gone, oh my God, you're going to defund. But if you look underneath it, the original idea of defunding the police wasn't take money away from police services. The idea was to begin to redirect some of that money toward community services where there is a space of active love for healing to occur. You know, there's a domestic dispute. Should we send in a cop with a gun on his hip that's trigger happy and wants to fight, wants to threaten? No, what if we sent in community activists? This is the idea of defund. It's to direct that money toward community activists that, you know, some in the neighborhood goes to the house where there's a domestic disturbance. And it's somebody who's probably been through domestic disturbance themselves, maybe been put in jail for it and has done their healing work and is able to go into that space and create safety, create support, and elicit healing rather than exacerbate with more violence. So I'm all for defunding the police. One of the other aspects of defunding the police is that we move into those that were yesterday called police actually becoming, once again, if you look back in the history of it, it wasn't a policeman. It wasn't somebody who's coming to make sure you do what you're supposed to do. It was a peace officer. It was someone who was trained in creating a space of peace and creating a space of safety within the community and resolving disputes so that it doesn't become a violent culture. Obviously, we've lost that one in this culture. And so often somebody with a big gun on their hip is sent in, and when a community activist, a peace officer might go in and be able to facilitate dialogue between these, you know, disputing neighbors or disputing family members, render healing and offer community support for healing rather than more trauma. Now, the angry who are resisting this whole defund the police, they actually want to take the money away from the police, the ones that don't agree with them. So whole, you know, all the dynamics that go on when there's no healing available. And this work is about bringing and facilitating the healing process wherever it occurs, wherever the trauma is. You know, those people who are out there raging and attacking and, you know, poll workers being beat on and verbally, you know, lied about and, you know, that whole thing. There's just so much healing that's needed. And everywhere that anger is expressing, you know, I love what Albert Einstein said about anger. He said, anger only occurs in the bosom of fools, because anger is a drug that anesthetizes pain, and people are engaged in behavior that is inflicting pain on themselves and others, is allowed to continue because anger is there, anesthetizing awareness of what one is doing to oneself and those around them. So the healing process is what we're here to inspire and engage in and bring forward a different dynamic in the world. Carl Jung made this comment several decades ago: until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Now, bouncing off of Jung, I'll offer the thought that anything you hold within you and refuse to allow into awareness will sooner or later become a behavior-driving reality for you. Sooner or later, it's going to find its a way to weave itself into your perceptual constructs upon which you base your behavior. And if there are threads in that weaving of hate and fear and rage and guilt and unresolved pain, then the behavior is going to become aberrant behavior. That's where we offer the idea of becoming an observer of your words. You know, several centuries ago, Shakespeare penned, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." Now, if you look back into the early scriptures, what does it say? It says, "Take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life." Now, that word heart, in our modern updated language, would be the unconscious. Take care what's in your unconscious, because that's what's going to show up in your life. And as Shakespeare so brilliantly observed, your words are going to inform you long before your behavior does, oftentimes, that there are energetic dynamics that need to be cleaned up. So this mind is an energetic engine that reflects in our world as a creative process. And if our words reflect that some we've dissociated from some part of our minds, then it's going to seem like something outside attacks us, because we'll take that dissociated part of our own minds and use it to build our perceptual constructs. So when I recognize and I understand that my words flying up reflect my unconscious, the heart is the unconscious, and through my words, if understood correctly, I have direct access to the source of that which I've been unconsciously creating in my life, and at that point, I can correct it. So our speech, if we can decode it, is one of the biggest clues. Now, if I live in denial, thinking or speaking as though the cause of what I'm experiencing is outside of me, then I have to hide or dissociate from the real cause, just reinforcing the whole unconscious game of life, reinforcing this unnatural condition of having an unconscious compartment in my mind. And that's the place where I hide everything I don't want to deal with. By doing that, I guarantee I get to deal with it forever. Now, then you say to yourself, well, gee, if as much as 98% of my mind is unconscious, how do I find the parts of my mind that need to be healed? That's what this worksheet is about. That's what forgiveness is about. If you're not using it, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper, it says start here. And it will walk you right into and through the whole forgiveness process. You can fill out the worksheet there live on the website, print your results if you choose to, close it if you're finished with it, and it's gone. It's not saved or reserved anywhere. You can download and print the worksheets on your own printer, or send them to your printer to turn into a notebook you can work with. Or you can go to our website, you can go to your app store on your phone, whether it's an Android or an iPhone, and type in the words Heartland, HEARTLAND, one word, Heartland, Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that in your app store, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app created by Miss Jeannie. And it's an awesome way to access the tools and support as well. Because on each page, she has a link where you can write directly to us. You can ask your question. You're at step 3 in the worksheet, and gee, I don't understand what this means. Bing, bing, bing. Type it in, send it to us. The next show, Jeannie will read your question on the show, and we'll discuss it. And we'll provide you an answer. And then after that show, she'll send you back an email with a link to the show so you can have access to the answer to your question. So we're doing everything we can do to support you, and we appreciate your participation and support. By the way, speaking of support, last week, Miss Julie Matthews volunteered. You know, we've been having some challenges with cash flow since Heartland's been closed for 3 years now, and we're not on the road anymore. So Julie offered to match donations up to $1,000. I think right now we're at about somewhere around $600. So if anybody is being touched by this work and is supporting you and assisting you, and you're in a position to, and you'd like to offer support, here's a chance to double whatever support you'd offer. And so if that's something that fits for you and you'd like to do, you can go to, again, on the website, there's a donate button. Just click it and donate whatever you'd like to do. You can do a one-time donation, or you can do a regular monthly. Hey, this supports me on a regular monthly basis, so I'm going to offer support back again.
And
at this point, your support will double. Yes, Jean.
She also said she was going to put a time limit to October 15th. So that means
okay.
We have this coming Saturday, or not this coming Saturday, next Saturday, the 15th. So you need to make it within that time frame for her to double it.
Yeah, if you're interested in supporting, that would be awesome. Cool. There's a donate button right on the website, yagen.org. Or actually, I think there's a donate button. No, it's not in the app. You have to go to the website to get. If you, from the app, you can go to the website and find the donate button, right?
Right. The app would not allow us to put
right.
a donate in it.
Okay. Cool.
And we do have a hand up.
Awesome. Let's say hello to our caller.
It's 541. I believe it's Miss Lick.
Yes, it is. Can you hear
me? Hey there,
me
young
all
lady.
Right?
You're loud and clear.
You can hear. Good. Because you're cutting out, and I wanted to let you know, but I also was wondering, is it possible for you to put a link into that Winnie the Pooh article that author wrote?
I did.
Perfect. And also
in the
that
notes.
Narwhal, excuse me, Narwhal prayer for the grandparents.
I'll put that in as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate what you're doing. But I thought I would let you know that you're cutting out, so I'm missing some of the words. Excuse me, I got a froggy, an Oregon frog in my throat all of a sudden.
I just got a text from a couple of people that said the sound sounded fine for them on their end. So I don't know.
Oh, good. I tried to call back in and got the same thing, so I don't know. But I thought I would
Weird.
Just alert you just in case. Yeah.
Thank
Perfect.
You.
All
so
right.
What's exciting in your world, young lady?
Getting ready to go to the duck garden. What else could be exciting?
There you go. We've been doing lots of that the last few days. I mean, the whole house is just fragrant with all these herbs. One of the things we discovered that we grew this year that we've never grown before, and I'd never even heard of it as a tea, is lemon balm. And we ended up with this. We actually had to transplant it at one point, and it just thrived in its new transplant. I mean, it was just like this one plant probably ended up, about maybe 2.5 feet in diameter and 2.5 feet tall. And we made a tea out of it, and with a little bit of maple syrup and nut pods, French vanilla cream. Oh, what an awesome tea. So it's like, ooh, this one's out of our own garden.
The reason I planted that this year is because for those of you who have challenges in sleeping all night, which I have had, and one of the natural supplements I take, its main ingredient is lemon balm. And so I thought, well, instead of taking it as a supplement, why don't we just grow it and make it as a tea? So until you know how it's going to impact you, you might not want to drink it in the middle of the day unless you want to take a nap.
Well, it's delicious. I mean, it's one of the, it's actually probably my second favorite tea. No, it's pretty good stuff. Easy to grow. I mean, it just thrived, blew up. We probably got a whole year's supply, and it's a perennial, so next year it'll come up again on its own. But we probably got enough from this one plant to last us through next growing season.
We also, for the first time this year, grew bee balm. And it is... You can do two things with
B-A-L-M.
It. One is you can actually, B-A-L-M, yeah. You can actually add, you put it in with olive oil and leave it for like a month to, what do you call it?
Steep.
Where it soaks it in. Yeah.
Steep.
And then you add, my mind's not there. What did I have you order last night?
Beeswax. Then you add wax
and
to make a paste out of it. Yeah.
Add that to the oil that has the bee balm in it, and you make a paste that's good for like burns and stings and scrapes and cuts, and you can make tea out of the bee balm as well, and it's good for digestion and fever and menstrual problems and all kinds of things. So we're really getting into that.
That's fun.
Great.
That's pretty cool.
Great. I have both of those in my garden. We must be on the same page. So I'm going to
have you been making a tea out of the say again?
I'm going to have to sign off because
okay.
I've got another commitment, but I wanted to let you know that that was very meaningful
Appreciate
for
it.
Me today, what you shared. And also, yes, I have made tea with the
bee balm. So very good. We'll talk to you later.
All right, young lady. Have a blessed one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
And I got a text from Urate, and she said it's one of her favorites, too, that she makes it and that she actually mixes it with, let me open it back up. She mixes lemon balm, spearmint, and holy basil together.
Hmm.
So I know it's yummy.
Spearmint and lemon.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting. We'll have to try that. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
We've
and
got
we do
spearmint,
have another
we?
Hand up. Actually,
great.
Yes, we do. We grew it as well.
Cool.
We actually have two hands up, but we're down to 8 minutes. So let's see what we
let's
can
go
do.
Go for it.
First one is 828 Magda. You're on the air.
Hello, hello. I'll say this fast.
Hey, welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah. That's so nice to hear. And I love hearing you guys every day. Regarding difficulty sleeping, I have discovered something new by doing a little research with Dr. What's-His-Face on the web. And
oh, yeah,
what
good
I
old Dr. What's-His-Face. I remember him.
Yeah, you know him. The web knows all. Anyway, I discovered that one of my difficulties or what was producing a difficulty for me in sometimes falling asleep and sometimes staying asleep was lack of morning light in my face, on my face. And you, of course, don't look directly at the sun, but make sure you get out as early as you can and spend at least 10 minutes outside getting sunlight on your face. And since I am doing that, oh, my goodness, what a difference. My sleep is so very sound. I fall asleep easily. Yeah, it cues the body's internal mechanism to reset. And because I'm definitely a night person kind of, but
right.
I would also like to be able to sleep. So this has been so helpful for me. And I will try. Yeah. I will try the bee balm? For that, Jeannie?
The one for sleep is the lemon balm.
Lemon balm. Okay, great.
Lemon balm,
great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super.
And the other thing we've been doing is lemongrass, and that turned into this beautiful, like, probably 4-foot diameter plant. And, I mean, just awesome. We took it. We actually, it was one little, potted plant when we got it. And we put it in our new third garden at the beginning of the season. Jeannie actually took the shovel to pull it out, and it came out, and the root of the plant was probably, maybe 12 inches in diameter.
Wow.
And we tried to break it apart and couldn't. We ended up having to use a saw to get through the roots. And it was harder to saw through the roots of this lemongrass plant than it is to saw through a 2x4. I mean, I could hardly get through it with a saw. The roots were so dense and so tight.
Wow.
So lots of fun learning.
Do those roots also go very deep?
They probably were maybe 6 inches deep. They went deeper than that, but what I was able to shovel and get up was about 6 inches deep.
Okay, well, the reason I asked that question is because it would probably do a lot to break up the soil that we have here. Deep-rooted plants are very, very good for that purpose. Cool, and that's lemongrass, right?
Lemongrass.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But the lemongrass is sensitive. If the temperature drops below 40, it will die.
Awesome.
And
okay.
So they suggested that you bring it in the house, but to break the roots apart and put them in separate pots and let it go hibernate in the house and then reset it the next spring. So that's what we did.
And what all are you getting out of the lemongrass, Jean?
I was reading something last night that said you could use the leaves to make a tea, but we had already cut those off because the first article that I had read, you only use the stalk. And right now our stalks are probably two foot long, and you have to peel the hard part off of them, and you just use the center soft part of the stalk. And it's used in stir fries or teas or you know, various things. It's very lemony. So, and
wow,
you can preserve that. You can dry it and preserve it in jars for up to 2 years.
That's pretty cool. I know you have another caller, so should we let this go?
All right, young lady.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Sounds good. Appreciate
love you.
You. Okay, blessings.
You
bye-bye.
All right, 808. I think this is Roma. Welcome.
Yeah, it's me. Tis I.
Hey, welcome.
So regarding lemongrass, I make something that I call I forget what I call it. But anyway, you boil three stalks, about the first 4 inches of the lemon, of three stalks of lemongrass. You boil it in water, 8 cups of water,
mm-hmm,
till it changes color. And while
right,
you're doing that, you can juice some turmeric, about a handful of turmeric, and the same amount of ginger. Juice them in your juicer. And this is a lemon, forget what we call it. Anyway, and then you add a cup of maple syrup and a half a teaspoon of salt, of good salt or organic salt, and then to that, and you mix the turmeric, ginger, and the maple syrup up in your Vitamix, and then you add it to your 8 cups and 8 more cups of water too. So there's 16
mm-hmm
cups of water and 3 stalks of lemongrass, 4 inches
right,
from the bottom, including the very bottom, and then turmeric and ginger juice. And it's an amazing, amazing, wonderful thing. I always have that in my refrigerator.
And you're using it kind of as a tonic?
Yeah, it's called lemon ginger tonic. That's the name of it. Lemon ginger
cool
tonic. Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And
I've noticed, I have a theory that when we're talking on cell phones on this call, that it's less clear to the listeners, that if you have a landline phone, it sounds more clear. But that's only a theory, but I feel like it may be really true. And then Sunday first. Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah.
Well, I like.
Go on.
I like the lemon ginger tonic idea. We'll try that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic.
That sounds pretty cool.
Mm.
Nice. Got about 30 seconds left.
Yeah. I wrote something about Sunday first and last half hour.
Maybe tomorrow you can share it with us. Thank you. And we're down to the last 10 seconds.
Mind, okay,
yeah,
very good.
Yeah.
Aloha,
cool,
everybody.
Aloha. Have a blessed one. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And the best year yet of your eternal life. It is definitely an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.